Welcome back in. Thank you for joining us. We are here every week. We're doing Tuesdays and Thursdays, and we'll be here consistently at 8:30. Now, Brent Rollins, who joins me from PFF and Rivals, kids are in baseball season, so that might throw a wrench into some delays, but possibly not. Tonight, Mother Nature is cooperating because Mother Yes. Nature hates baseball. That's exactly what's happening because nobody loves baseball. Everybody loves football. It's universal. Speaking of football, the Super Bowl, did you watch?
Kind of a big game.
How did we partake? Because the game was fantastic.
Awkward pause there because no, it was not. You saw in what, 10 minutes, maybe 15, that one team was physically way more dominant than the other.
Yeah, it was ugly. It was now. Listen, I knew going into the game that, like we talked about it a little bit, I knew going into the game the Eagles had better players, but I could also say that about the Chiefs against a lot of people, and I feel like the Chiefs still found a way to mitigate it. That was a disaster. I mean, that was like I was ready so much because Brett knows me so well. Like I was ready for my Mahomes arguments. Like, I was ready to crown Mahomes the greatest football player of all time.
You just want to push somebody to the side, right?
I'm just talking facts. Like, the debate to me would have been very, very clear and very one-sided. Like, and this is how I would answer you, Brent. If I asked you right now, I'm not asking for any context, who is the greatest basketball player of all times? Would you go Michael Jordan or LeBron James?
Jordan.
Okay. The only reason people go LeBron James is because of longevity. So, yes, if you want to go longevity, I'll give you Brady. But if Mahomes won 3 in 3 years, which has never been done, 4 in 8 years as a starter or 6 years, whatever it is, it's crazy. It's easily the most dominant stretch in the history of football, and he's the best player, and he's been doing it with, you know, listen, he's had good pieces around him, but not even close to good as great a pieces as a lot of teams, but he's found a way to get it done and make plays. So I had the debate queued up, and then he didn't show up. Like, we can place blame whatever direction you want to place, and I'm fine giving Andy Reid a lot of the blame because the only play that I saw worth a crud early was the first play when they went –
first play of the game, RPO.
Yes, they went RPO, and they did a good job with Schuster on the release and looked it off and got the ball out of his hands. And I'm like – exactly what I would do. The Eagles' D-line is dirty and deep and so good. They're not going to be able to pass protect. The Chiefs have already moved their right guard to left tackle, like who's one of the best guards. Their line has stunk all year long. And then it was just an abstract disaster. Like it was a bad moment for team Mahomes, which I am on to be team Mahomes versus team Brady.
Very clear.
I'm in fully. And it was a bad night for me and those in company.
But it was a great night for Jalen Hurts, who I think the third QB I think I saw to start win a national championship as well as the Super Bowl, in addition to Joe Namath and Joe Montana.
He got a natty as a starting quarterback in college?
Like, they kind of beat Georgia the game he started.
Oh, that's right. He got the start, but he got benched.
Correct.
So, yeah.
So, technically, okay. he wins
well,
that.
I mean,
but still,
they were getting stomped out in the first half. Jalen Hurts got bailed out by Tua Tagovailoa, and Tua went nuts, and Devontae Smith. I guess he gets the nod as the starting quarterback. But
you know, he played phenomenal and did everything right. I mean, he didn't make the one mistake, but outside of that, it was, you know, with the legs, he was leading rusher in the game. And spec, when you think about the fact that he got beat by Mahomes, you know, comes back and beats him, first QB to win a rematch of QBs, things like that. Like, just and I don't know him personally, obviously, but I just see so much of what he is and what he's about.
Oh, you would love him.
And just being part of it.
You would love him too because he's similar background to Brent. Brent's dad was a coach. Jalen Hurts' dad is a coach. He's no nonsense. He's not all about self-promotion. If you watch him, like, he's just not he's a flatliner. He's disciplined. He's tough. He's strong as an ox. That's why that Philly, you know, that's why the sneak is so good and the tush push, because he squats 600 pounds. Like, he says, does all the right things. And that being said, and he deserves tremendous respect, Brent. Like, I'm going to give him respect, and he deserves that. He's got the best roster in football, and it ain't close. And
the story of the game is the D-line.
Oh, well, he is a perfect fit for Philadelphia. Like, a perfect fit. You got the best running back in the game. You got the best wide receiver core probably in the game of football. You got the best offensive line in the game of football. And he's a guy that extends drives, can run it himself. So because he can run it, he makes Saquon better. Like, 100%. Like, that ability to tuck it. And you saw the misdirection where they're pulling guys and handing it to Saquon with no lead blockers because Jalen can pull it and go, and it makes you defend the whole field. The scrambles are the scrambles. What he's not, Brent, and it doesn't matter, but what he's not is he's not a rhythm passer. He's not going to drop back and beat you from the pocket consistently. That's not his game. But with that roster, he doesn't have to be. He is the perfect fit for that Philly roster that they've built around him. Am I going to take Jalen Hurts and go drop him in a situation like Josh Allen or right. Joe Burrow? Absolutely not. Like, that's not going to work. But for what he is on, he is a perfect fit. He's got a great personality, a great demeanor. He's tough as nails. Like, there's nothing not to like about Jalen Hurts.
And the thing that you – the one best part that you may have missed there is the best GM right now, and that's Howie Roseman, who
crazy
coincidentally picked a couple of guys from Georgia in the first round of 2 years ago, and now those guys, along with some others, have basically three championships in 4 years, two in college and one in the pros, and the ultimate sort of recruiting pitch. I don't know that we'll ever see a defensive line like we saw 2021 Georgia
with you'll the never amount see of a NFL guys like that ever.
No, all of that. And guess what? Philly said, hey, those guys are a lot of winners. They're pretty good. Let's just go take them. And Jalen Carter, Nolan Smith, you know, obviously to bring it back to the college game, that those guys have elevated. Carter's probably one of the most, if not the most dominant defensive linemen, and Nolan Smith's growing each year, getting better, got better big time late in the year. Jordan Davis, by the way, who's probably one of the best humans I've ever interacted with. Like, he's an amazing human being. But, yeah, just part of a deep and talented defensive line that completely and utterly dominated the game.
Yeah, and Jalen Carter, remember, you know, the draft stuff that came out about him,
a little frozen there. In terms of looking at moving forward, though, and I don't know if you can hear me, but the Chiefs, in terms of this game itself, or the Chiefs looking forward, they've got some rostery to them. Oh, and he's back.
I'm back.
Jalen Carter draft. That was the last thing we heard.
What pick was he? Because he was
ninth.
He was the ninth.
Bijan went eighth to the Falcons.
Let's not do the Falcons thing. We're not going to do that. The thing about Jalen Carter was he dropped a little bit, but we all talked about him universally. Everybody, you know, kind of had him number one on their board, but it was the, you know, I remember getting into a little bit of an argument on set with someone. I won't name any names, but like they were talking about Jalen Carter and his character. And I got a little bit upset because they talked about him being lazy. I didn't see that at Georgia. Like, I watched a lot of tape. His competitive character was really, really good. Like,
yeah,
he cares about the game, that with the strength, with the hands. But, like, you could see, like, that dude competed really, really hard, but just had some special gifts. And that's what you look at, man. I mean, the way they've drafted, like, just this year with Riley Cooper coming in, right? Or Cooper DeJean. Wrong sport. Wrong guy. But when you look at Cooper DeJean. Cooper DeJean had the athletic profile, was a baller in college, but Cooper DeJean was white. Like, and that's why he didn't get drafted in the first round. Like, if you want to call it, I'm serious, Brent. Like, I don't, you know me, I'm going to shoot you straight.
Fact.
Like,
it's fact information. Yes. Very factual.
He was literally the last guy drafted since Seahorn, I think, at that position. And so, you know, and then Quinyon they got in the first round. Like, they got two corners that they plug and play, and everything, Bond in free agency, like everything they touched was ridiculous. But yeah, getting guys like that, like Nolan Smith is a hammer too, dude. Like he is a physical, like where he's supposed to be guy, but does it with relentless energy, does it with effort. He's improved as a pass rusher. We've seen that since he's gotten to college too. He's starting to add to, but I'm just telling you, being around that cat's different now. Like the energy level that you have, that kid has, look at that picture right there, by the way. His energy is on another level. It is nuclear. Like you're around him and you're like, what the heck, man? Like he wears you out just being around him. He's got so much flipping energy. So it's crazy.
And he's
man.
Got they, a lot they, of verbal they, energy too.
Yes.
He is
yes.
a talker.
Not
Were
always
you ever at the
either.
Level of talker as him?
No. Hey, yeah. I saw him.
It's a different level with him in terms of Brent, as a constant.
I listened to him talk to a freshman one day in the training room when my wife was doing her ACL recovery at Georgia. And he literally walked up to the kid and he was like, listen here, mother blanker. Like, we don't do that mother blanking stuff. Like, that's not what you do at Georgia. Like, we do it differently. We're going to do it like this. You're going to do it like this because this is how we do it. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, that's what I'm talking about. So you and we can talk about, listen, Stetson was unbelievable. You know, even you got James Cook doing great things in the NFL. Plenty of guys doing great things. But like when you've got a guy like that, but a defense like that, that all of them in the NFL now. And obviously the Eagles said, I like the way Kirby coaches. I like the way they develop. These dudes are tough. They're physical. I know what I'm getting from them. I'm not worried about who they are as character people and their football character. And that's why you draft those guys.
And Jalen Hurts actually gave probably the most resounding recruiting pitch for Kirby when he talked about how the Eagles team this year was way more connected and that it was driven in part because of the atmosphere that the Georgia guys had created and with N'Kobe Dean specifically also in his leadership ability. So they definitely gave Georgia a sort of layup in recruiting as the headline says there.
Right.
So.
And N'Kobe was another great example of that. You remember when N'Kobe grabbed, who was that? It was
Channing Tindall in the national
Channing
championship
Channing Tindall
game.
In the semifinal game, right? It wasn't even the championship game.
No, it was a championship game against Bama.
It was a championship game near the red zone. He kind of messed up and he grabbed that sucker and he was like, what the heck are you doing? He did not say it in those terms, but he's like, what the heck are you doing? And like, again, it just takes good. It takes different guys to be able to call people out. Like some people aren't comfortable doing that. Like, but you want guys like that, that will hold people to a standard and you're going to do this. This is how it's done. This is how we do it. And they got a bunch of Georgia guys that do that. Jalen Hurts is that guy, by the way. Jalen Hurts.
Yes.
Is not going to blink. He's going to do it the right way. He's physical. He's tough. He's got so many great attributes. But, I mean, that roster is absolutely filthy. And the key
piece not going anywhere for a couple years.
No, and bringing Fangio in on that defensive side of the football changed everything because the structure of the defense and who he is as a defensive play caller to go. Now, listen, Kellen Moore's gone, and the year before their OC was a struggle bus. So, and Jalen Hurts took a couple steps backwards, but – everything they did this offseason was absolute gold. Becton at right guard, like everything. Yeah. Everything they touched was gold. So Saquon Barkley, try topping that next year.
Yeah, not going to happen. And I think their dominance directly impacts the draft. Like you're just like when in doubt, just take a defensive front guy. Somebody who's can dominate that position group, the edge, whatever it is, you're going to see, I think, that be almost record setting in a way from, and plus it's the depth of this draft is that.
I think that's why Abdul Carter tweeted that out.
O-line's like, pretty good too. Yes. Very true.
Yeah. O-line averages the O-line Eagles averaged offensive lineman. I think it was like 6'6", 340
yeah.
or 335, like big freaking maulers, like big grown men. Like they are, and they didn't push anybody around. Like Saquon didn't really get off and get nasty, but they had to commit so many guys to him. But the Chiefs did a good job stopping the run. But the passing game, you have to play man-to-man. Like to stop Saquon in that run game, you have to load the box. And when you do, A.J. Brown's a big mismatch nightmare. Devontae Smith can run by people. So like that team and obviously, yeah, the offensive line was a big part of that as well.
All right, you brought up that name, Devontae Smith. So he won a Heisman, won a national championship. and now is a Super Bowl winner. There's, let's see, four others other than him. Can you name them?
Desmond Howard.
Did not win a national championship.
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that part. I was thinking MVP. So won a national championship and an NCAA championship.
And a Super Bowl. Or and a Heisman Trophy.
Oh, and a Heisman Trophy.
That's a small list. It's four others. Tony Dorsett, Marcus Allen, Reggie Bush, and Charles Woodson.
Reggie Bush won a Super Bowl with Drew Brees and company?
Yeah.
Wow. I forgot about that because he had a nice little run. He wasn't a bust, but
yep. I think he would have been even more so big time in like today's NFL than
yes. The spacing and the passing, the pass game, like 100% changed for sure. It's good right, trivia, so, Brent. Look at you.
Wes hit that one. He helped me out with that one. Let's see. Transitioning to the game that we kind of focus on, it's like the namesake of your channel here. It says college football. So I don't know if you noticed this, but a few days ago, somebody had a birthday, and we can now no longer say that Ryan Williams is 17. And to celebrate, by the way, he got a nice little NIL deal. Did you see his NIL deal that he got?
I did not. Surprise me. What are we?
The company, I think, is called Sally Hansen, and they do nail polish. It's like a thing. I think his sister or something maybe does the fingernails before his games or something like that. But hey, different strokes for different folks. I know that might not be your cup of tea, but the guy's turning in some NIL dollars.
Money's green.
All the same color.
I get it. Thank God he wears gloves. I'm very thankful he wears gloves.
That probably wouldn't have been your NIL deal back in the day, would it?
No, that's definitely not fine.
All right, so
thank God he's 18 too, though, because I don't have to hear that again one more time on a broadcast, which I'm okay with.
But I'm gonna. So, just out of curiosity, what would have your NIL deal like? What would have been like? Hey, this is fits perfect with you if NIL was a thing for you. Because my only guess would be video game based thing. But outside of that, what would have been the perfect one?
I mean, something to do with food because Fat Boy could crush. I mean, I was definitely Chick-fil-A would have been fantastic. That was definitely what I visited probably the most. But yeah, video games or food. Shoes. Now I would have done. I'd have gone buck wild if you got me some Nikes like and I could have picked them out or
like a local shoot like a local dealer kind of thing that
yeah that'd have been great. I'd have been all about like a sporting goods store where you could get like swag and stuff like that, but video games would have been great. GameStop, does GameStop do NILs? That would have been awesome back in the day.
So what was your Chick-fil-A order, say fresh, not junior year or senior year, freshman, sophomore year?
Yeah, I was a little bit hefty, but I think I got, my son's way better than me already, but I think I got like two Chick-fil-A sandwiches with cheese. And then I think I got two fries. Now my Wendy's order was my pregame. I got two triple stacks with two orders of fries. I put them on the burger and had a Frosty. That was my,
for pregame.
That was my day before. My night before. But Inoko was fantastic. There was a Japanese restaurant, and that would have been my number one choice. That came to my head when you said that, like triple fried rice, double filet, double chicken. That was my. And you wonder, anybody wondering why I was 292 pounds? This is exactly why. But thank God I took some food nutrition courses in my senior year, and I've never eaten like that again. But God, that would be. What would yours be? Hey, yours would be that Marshall guy's biscuit.
Ben says Mr. Clean. but that's now. I'm like college, full head of hair, by the way. Full head of hair in college.
That would have been that's a great one. I love you, Ben. That was fantastic.
Tudor's Biscuit World, though, that would have been a phenomenal one for in college. That's for sure. Did you see, speaking of Bama, and we have Bama up there, that a lot of talk recently about them being more dialed in this offseason, about not being late to workouts. Have you seen that kind of chatter or? Or no, not so much.
Yeah, I'm confused. Like, I feel like I'm missing. I would love to get more details on this and get more of the story and hear from more of the players and stuff. But like, I didn't know this was ever a thing. Like I thought you always had to be on time for workouts. And I thought if you didn't, it was a punishment. Like, right. By the way, you want some stories? I'll never forget, like in the NFL, I'll never forget when guys would walk in late and Coach Lewis would be like, all right, that's 10. And I was like, what? Just like, what does he mean? And then literally somebody would be late another time. And finally, after five or six times, I was like, what does that mean? He was like, that's 10K. And I was like, ooh, shist. Like 10,000? It's like, yeah, 10 grand. You want to show up late to meetings? Like, you're going to pay me out of my checkbook. And I was like, oh my gosh. And you know me.
I'll be here 30 minutes early.
I will never be late. Like, I will leave 30 minutes early to make sure I'm not giving away that money. But listen, what Bama went through a year ago, and it was complete and total culture shock, and it was complete and it was done one way. That was the way. And everybody talked about it. Everybody thinks it's the gold standard. And then, you know, being Kalen DeBoer coming in next, that's a hard life, man. Like, yes. Whether you, we both thought he was a great coach. Nobody disputed he was a great coach, but you're taking over for the greatest coach of all time. And that's a different standard you have to live up to while being your own man, while getting kids getting to be able to know you, man. That's not a tough job. So you kind of thought some of this would, I wonder how much of it's true. Do I really want to believe, and how much they were just right. allowed to freestyle and do what they want?
Yeah, I think there's probably some element of maybe not as bad, or it's more blown up maybe than you think in a way. It's just maybe one comment that's kind of taken that way. All right, so going to their rival in terms of actual legitimate news, DJ Durkin is staying at Auburn. He is now the second highest paid coordinator in all of college football at $2.5 million per year. What's interesting when you look at the top paid assistants. So Knowles at Penn State is Jim Knowles is now first. What was it? 3.1 a year.
3.1. Yeah.
Most of them are defensive coordinators, though. It's mostly it's like Baker at LSU.
Baker broke the bank last Michigan. Year.
Yeah.
Baker, you know, Blake Baker goes from Missouri to LSU, gets 2.5 to fix that defense, and it was like a big deal. But and then it just goes up with Knowles with 3.1, and then DJ Durkin. By the way, you know what's fantastic for defensive coaches or defensive coordinators? You relish, you love. It's the most amazing thing when a big-time job like Ohio State loses their guy because – everybody getting a raise. Like,
yes.
Uh-huh. Come on. Come talk to your boy. Oh, I'm talking to Ohio State. Like, Coach Freeze talking to Ohio State. Hey, company talking to Ohio State. How much?
Who's like, the guy in Atlanta that's the agent for all the head coaches? Is it Jimmy Sexton? Is that his name? Sexton, that's the agent? Yeah. That guy's got it made when other coaches leave and change and things like that. It's like,
it's the best.
My guy getting calls.
It's the best way to do it. Like, and you could be doing the calls for so many guys at one time, like, which is amazing. But I was actually talking to Freeze. I was talking to him today about it. And I was just like, man, like, but I don't think you have, like, I don't think you get a piece because until that job's filled, there's still a chance. Like, there's still a chance someone can leave and someone can go. But I think DJ Durkin, I think the most impressive thing about him is, like, he's another one of those guys. Again, I'm going to say this so much, and people are going to get annoyed probably, but, like, your defense takes on your personality. And he is energetic. He looks you in the eye. Like, he brings juice. Every walkthrough you go through with him, like, it's energy. It's detailed, detail-oriented. It's energy. It's focus. Like, it's locked in. And Auburn's defense has not been the problem in Hugh Freeze's first 2 years. Like, the offense has been really bad, which is surprising because Hugh's always found a way, it seems like, to have great quarterback play wherever he's been, but they've struggled on the offensive side of the football. But the defense has been really, really good. And when the offense gets better, it helps your defense even more. So I think it was important for them to keep their guy, to keep the guy that's been successful so far in the league. So you got to pony up, especially when Ohio State and big schools like that come calling.
Speaking of big schools, like if you look where Durkin has coached in his, like, you know, throughout his career, at Florida, D.C., Michigan, D.C., head coach at Maryland for a little bit, A&M, Ole Miss a little bit, A&M, DC. Like, so he's been through some humongous programs. By the way, started in 01 as a GA at Bowling Green. Do you remember who the head coach was then at Bowling Green?
In 2001?
2001, 2002-ish. Pretty famous coach who's won a national championship.
Who?
Went to Utah, then went to Florida, then went.
Urban Meyer.
Urban Meyer was at Bowling Green. Same. That's like about 15 minutes from where I went to college. So, you know, knew that very much there. And all kinds of actually coaches have come from that. Dan Mullen was there at that time. So a lot of different coaches have come from there. So speaking of Auburn, they are next on our list of teams that we are looking at to sort of looking ahead to kind of a state of the program, look ahead to 2025. Auburn now, by the way, had 8 straight winning seasons with Gus. You know, started off losing the BCS championship, getting all the way to the BCS championship, losing, but still had 8 straight winning seasons, and since have had 4 straight losing seasons, 2 with Harsin and then 2 with Hugh Freeze currently. They haven't won more than 3 games in the SEC since 2020. And then, interestingly enough, like I always
– crazy, man. That's crazy. That's nuts just to think about.
Another thing I always associate with Auburn is NFL-level talent. But how many – can you – like top 100, sort of top 3-round picks in the last 4 drafts they've had? It's not a large number.
Do they have a corner?
4. It's 4 guys in the last 4 years that have been top 100 picks. So one of McCreary – went to, I think, Tennessee. Anthony Schwartz, the speed guy that went to the Browns in the 3rd round.
Yeah.
And then Derek Hall off the edge and Tank Bigsby at running back. That's it. They haven't had a 1st-round pick since 2020 when they had 2 with Derek Brown and Igbenana something or other. I can't butcher his last name. Noah. I think
you said that right, actually. First name. So no 1st-round pick since 2020?
No.
Wow.
They went to the portal heavy this year, and you know, Davey, if you don't really like your quarterback room, or it's, you know, kind of what can you do?
Just bring in 30 guys.
Just completely flip it upside down. So anyone that was there, and now you've got Jackson Arnold, you even got Ashton Daniels from Stanford, you've got the 5-star recruit in Deuce Knight, you've got another. Bailey kid that was a transfer to, I think, from South Carolina, maybe. So their quarterback room is completely different. So the portal is very much, they were very active in the portal, didn't really lose much. A couple guys that played significant,
Why is that important? That's important because when Hugh Freeze has his trigger, man, it's a good offense. Like, he knows how to use numbers, he knows how to use pace. Like, Hugh Freeze does a really good job with offensive football, and he feels the game. He knows the game. And so, like, I think he knows, man, I just need my guy. And if I got 4 or 5 or 6 cracks at this, one of these guys are going to come to fruition. And I think Jackson Arnold's probably the big name because he started for Oklahoma. And
right.
I don't know how to grade him because offensive line for Oklahoma was terrible. It was awful. The wide receiver position was hurt and banged up, so it was awful. So he's a great runner, which fits in Hugh Freeze's system. Like, that's he's really good with mobile guys. So that's that's a big time plus. And he was a highly rated kid that had a lot of arm talent. But I think it's smart, man. I think it's smart to bring in a bunch of guys. Here's what will happen. Like, a lot of times, some of these guys that you bring in, especially probably the high school kid more than anything, like, if you get to spring, I'm not the guy, you jump in the portal and you leave, which is what we do now. So, like, whoever doesn't win the job, and that's why these coaches have gotten smarter. And when we get closer to the season, we'll talk about this. Like, oh, who's the starting QB? Don't know, guys. It's still really tight. Like, we're deciding between a few guys, but it's nip and tuck, man. They've had some good moments. Bougie. Like, they know who their guy is. They just don't want to say it because if they say it now, if that guy gets hurt game one, game two, I'm screwed because it might be really the 3rd-string guy because the 2nd guy is gone and it stinks. So if Hugh gets his trigger guy, he knows with the defense, the way they've played, now retaining Durkin. Another thing, Cam Coleman's a stud. Like, I've seen enough of Cam Coleman. Like, I didn't know if he'd stay there. I didn't know if he'd jump in the portal because he might want to go with his big frame freaky athletic ability and go look really good. By the way, Eric Singleton is a huge get in the portal for Auburn.
That was where I was heading next.
Dude, Hugh Freeze loves those gadget guys. He loves that gadget system. You can put guys in motion. You can do all kinds of fun things that are extensions of the run game, easy passes, easy completions. Eric Singleton, who just came from Georgia Tech in Buster Faulkner's system, was elite, really good. You can hand it to him. He can run it. He can catch it short, make guys miss on the perimeter screen games. He's a dependable receiver, too. I like this kid. I like this kid a lot. I think his production will soar, but you put him with Cam. Like, you've got the deep guy, the deep threat, the big body with the little body and the over the middle and the gadget guy, man. Like, this offense, if they get their trigger man fixed, like, it can do this, which means their win total should do that.
And the other thing from the portal, they got a tackle from USC, who, a 20-game starter, Mason Murphy, and then a 2-year starter from Virginia Tech and Xavier Chaplin. So, in addition to what they already had coming back, you'll have a very experienced offensive line. Now, experience doesn't always equal better play, but it's better to be experienced and have depth than it is to not be experienced and have little depth. So, with what they got coming back, it should sort of up the game a little bit on their offensive line.
And here's what I would argue, Brent, which I don't like this. Let me be very clear. I also know I know more what you are when I go in the transfer portal. Like, I'm not guessing. I'm not projecting. I'm not saying, how does he handle his time in college and schoolwork and all this stuff? How does he handle going against grown men? I've seen it. Yep. I watched it for 2 years at Virginia Tech. I know exactly I know what your deficiencies are. I know what you're really good at. And I know you'll fit in my system really well. So I think that's why the portal becomes more and more popular for all these guys, because people get to see what they've already become. They see more of the finished product than a guess, which can be in high school.
Now, the interesting part about their team in this offseason for them is given the change of Saban to DeBoer at Alabama, they went heavy in recruiting. Now, Alabama actually, I think, was third or fourth in terms of overall class rank, but Auburn's was ninth and sixth in the SEC. But out of the top 40 recruits in Alabama, which all were kind of D1, Power 4, G5 types, they got 11. Alabama only got 2. And they got 8 of the top 16 in the state. So from a recruiting perspective, and they obviously got 5-star QB Deuce Knight out of Mississippi. And then the 5-star.
By the way, is that not a great name?
Yes, Deuce Knight. That's a QB, I agree. That's a phenomenal.
Grow up, I want to be Deuce Knight. I'm going to change my name to Deuce, bro. It's fantastic. Deuce Knight. It sounds like a stud. I don't know much about the guy, except for I know he's
sounds really, really like a good player.
Huh?
It sounds like a good player, right?
When we were naming Nicholas, so when we named my son, I was like, it's got to be a good touchdown name. Like, if you hear it over the loudspeaker, Nick Pollock, like, it's a slam dunk. Like, I liked it. Lindsay had some other names. And then for our daughter, I'm like, it's got to be a over the speaker intercom, like at a basketball game, so-and-so for 3. And my wife wanted to go with Lindley for Leah. Like, Lindley Pollock for 3? Ugh. Like, no, babe, I don't like that. So we went Leah Pollock for 3. Like, just makes more sense.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. I actually, the only thing I actually thought about, I mean, first names, not so much. We went middle names. And my thought was, like, if you yell it, like, you're really mad, you're yelling at him.
Carson Cameron Chase.
Chase. Like, is how easy is that? And like, when you yell it, does it sound? Yeah, that was, but no, that's pretty good. So
it's Cameron Jace, Cameron Chase, and Carson Jace. Carson.
Yes.
Yeah. It's always that part's confused. I don't have Cameron and Carson confused, because if y'all saw them, they are two different human beings, two different body types, two different personalities. Everything about them are different, but the middle names sound very similar.
So recruiting, though, but dominating the state of Auburn. And that's something that obviously with Nick Saban there, that didn't necessarily happen. And now that's a possibility to where, now granted, Alabama went and got sort of national and did well from their own class perspective. But I think that helps in terms of perception and things. Obviously, now it's got to translate to the field. So we've hit a couple of the questions already. So do they have the right sort of coach QB combo finally? And I think maybe, I mean, we'll get to find out pretty early, by the way, when we
I'll say this
schedule here in a second.
I don't know the answer to that question yet.
Yeah.
But I do know that they're going to be better around the QB than they have been, which to me makes a lot of sense. The system is more in place. The talent is upgraded. I'm 100% certain the talent is upgraded. Now, they're youthful. Like, they're going to be younger than they were a year ago. A lot of young guys on the roster, a lot of guys that we don't know what to expect. But I think the QB position has a lot more upside than the QB position you had last year. And if the QB position hits, like, this is a team that becomes, you know, here's what sucks about the SEC. It becomes another team that can beat you because they got guys, you know, on the field that are really, really good. They find their trigger man, and to go with Coleman, to go with Singleton and some of the weapons in that offense that can change in a stop of a dime. That's another thing I love about Hugh Freeze. Like, I've seen Hugh Freeze go breakneck tempo, like breakneck as fast as you possibly can. But I've also seen Hugh Freeze. I absolutely love it. I actually sat down a couple years ago and met with him and asked him how he did it so I could incorporate some of that stuff into high school football and change tempos the way he does. Because he'll basically go red light, and where he did it with Liberty, where they would take the play clock down to 10, shift it down to 2 or 3, and then bam, you're running a play. So eating up time, so he can speed it up, he can slow it down. So Auburn's one of those teams that could be interesting and could come out of nowhere.
The ceiling argument with the QB, I think, is the best one because there was a ceiling previously. And if you get somebody, you raise that ceiling a little bit, you raise the potential that, hey, I can find lightning in a bottle and maybe be a 9-10 win type team. Second question, we kind of touched on it a little bit player-wise, but do we see what we saw from Cam Coleman the last three games, which – in the last three games, 22 catches on 25 targets, over 300 yards and 6 touchdowns, like, was a dominant force. Like, he has one of best players in college football level talent. And if you see that on a week-to-week basis, adding Singleton as somebody who takes defense's eyes, now you're getting way more interesting on offense.
Yeah, Cam Coleman, it'll be interesting to talk about, but I think Coleman and Singleton have a chance to be one of the better receiver duos easily in the SEC, but maybe in the country. I mean, if I'm thinking guys off the top of my head, like whoever plays with Jeremiah Smith, whoever plays with Abuka, whoever plays with Ryan Williams, like, there's probably going to be some of those guys that emerge, but those two together will work really well. I think about, Antonio Williams from Clemson. And that they've got Wesco. They've got Wesco. A squad there that, like, probably is one of the deeper squads, you know, duos, trios in America. But I think Auburn's definitely got an elite, you know, 1-2 punch at receiver that most teams wish they had.
Now, here's the interesting part for them is the schedule, obviously, with all these SEC teams doesn't change. But opening game at Baylor, who – very frisky Big 12 team, had a
finished
solid
hot
season.
Last year. Finished on really fire well. Last year.
A lot of momentum. And you got to go play them at their place in August in Texas. It's hot everywhere, but it's maybe even a different level of hot there. And then you get Oklahoma early. So you get Jackson Arnold has to go to Oklahoma in week 4 and see John Mateer in the Sooners and see his former team. But they get Georgia, Missouri, and Alabama at home. And specifically Georgia at their place has been, like, 2 years ago, they had them till the very end. Like, that
I feel like
is,
Auburn hasn't beaten Georgia in like 100 years now.
It's been a while. Yes.
How long has it been?
Is it maybe 6 or 7? It's since, 2017, I think, when they beat them at Auburn, and then Georgia turned around and beat them in the SEC championship game.
Yeah.
That was the last time. The sneaky game for them on their schedule.
That schedule looks good to me, though.
There is one really sneaky game because they got to go to Vanderbilt and see Diego Pavia, who's beat him 2 years in a row.
Pavia's
once at New Mexico State and then once last year. So could be three in a row for Pavia against Auburn. All right, so that leads to the ultimate question. Do you see this as a winning record team for the first time in which would be five seasons?
Yes, 100%. Yes, I'm down with saying that because Mercer win the guaranteed wins to me.
You got three of them. You got three guarantees. Ball State, South Alabama, Mercer.
Ball State, South Alabama, Mercer. I think they beat Baylor. They're going to beat two of Missouri, Arkansas, Kentucky, A&M, Oklahoma. Yeah. I think they're getting well over a winning record this year.
Okay.
Like,
because I think that's the first step for them.
I'm going to give them eight wins. Like, I'm going to give them several over what they've been the last couple of years. They didn't go to the bowl the last 2 years, right? Like, that's
no, four straight losing seasons.
Yeah, that's not good. So, I think they're. You can't keep Auburn down for that long, can you? I mean, there's too much tradition. The home field advantage is insane. I mean, that's one of the most fun places to play. Speaking of, by the way, you mentioned at Baylor. Have you ever seen the Baylor run out, Brent? Like,
I thought you were going to say the stadium, but I've not seen the run out. No.
So they basically run out onto the field, get to the sidelines, and their whole student section runs through the field afterwards. Like, sprints through the field, runs all the way through, and then runs into the student section and fills in. So they all get to run the field. They all storm the field. Like, I don't know if they get fined for that. They shouldn't, because it's obviously not, they're not getting fined. But if you do nowadays, you get fined. But it's one of the cooler, like, entrances and unique things in all of college football. But yeah, I'm buying Auburn this year. I think they finally get that quarterback situation. I'm betting on Hugh Freeze to get that thing, settled in. And I think the schedule looks good. And yes, Vanderbilt's, tough. But having Kentucky and Arkansas and Missouri and OU and A&M, I'm not sure that they're getting the brunt of the SEC teams probably that you want to face. But, whenever they face Alabama and they're at home, like,
yes, they hadn't beat 2 years ago, fourth and 31.
I don't know how to quantify it. I don't understand it. There's so many times that I've covered this game. I'm like, this game's going to be an ace whooping. Like, there's no way they keep it close, but Auburn always plays Alabama at home tough. And it's just, it's mind blowing, but it's a real thing that you've seen over the years. So I look for the War Eagle bounce back, homie.
I do think they take a step forward. And what is that? And I think you're right around eight. Like, that was, I think that's a good number. Last thing I got, unless you got anything else. If I said to you, and we're going to pay some respects. If I said to you, longtime Tulsa radio host, Brent Douglas, my namesake, does that ring a bell at all with you whatsoever?
Brent Douglas?
Yep.
No.
Does that doesn't ring a bell. Now, if I said, my name is Roy D. Mercer.
Yes. Of course I know Roy dang Mercer, baby.
So he was the guy that created that persona, passed away a few days ago. He was 69 years old, and it was one where, like, I had so many memories of this and listening to this as a kid. And, I remember some of my friends doing that, prank calling them, all sort of things like that. Like, just how big a boy are you? Like if you go YouTube chiropractor.
My boy Ryman. Hey, was it Sharon Jean?
Yeah, she got some my brains.
She got some my brains. That was, and that's cool. That is funny because you bring up that, like, it's a whole nother era. Like, kids don't even know how to prank call nowadays, do they? Like, no. That's not even a thing. And he was so flipping funny. Like, yeah, I didn't know that was his name. I didn't know you were going to talk about him.
So I didn't either. I didn't either. Fantastic. But I did know the personality, and it was something that it was interesting to read how it came about in terms of they started as a radio thing and then it grew and everybody loved it. And then they turned it into CDs and all sorts of other things that came along with it. But yeah, unfortunately we got, so having the birthday for, for Mr. Roy, Brent Douglas, Roy D. Mercer. How big a boy are you?
Come for the college football, you know, get some Roy Mercer to end it. I mean, I can't think of a better way. Hey, Thursday is going to be probably one of the most fun shows. Listen, we're going to get Matt Rhule, whether this week or next week. I promise we'll get him in the near future. But, like, we're going to get my boy Jesse Palmer. And I'm just telling you, like, Brent, I want you to have every ask known to man just locked, stocked, and barreled, because Jesse Spurrier stories, New York Giants stories, Bachelor stories. Like, the dude is one of the best storytellers I've ever been around. He's flipping fantastic. I mean, he's so awesome. So he'll be, I told him, I was like, I know you're a football analyst and all that cool stuff, and I know you host the Bachelor and stuff, but I'm like, I think we're just going to do like story time, because you're so good at telling stories. And well, he's got
he probably actually work. Has some thoughts about college football he'd like to share too, right? We could get those maybe. Like,
He's always good for that. I mean, nobody, I've never been around somebody who studied more for his job. Like, he's always dialed in and prepared. And I started off doing the booth with him, and I did it with him and Reese and him and Joe Tess. And we kind of had a rotating group of people. But if you ever heard those broadcasts, you probably didn't know they were three-man booths, because my boy Palmer could blow. Like, every chance he got, he had so much information he wanted to get out. I'd literally be like, "Nah." And like I said, the story times of him in the booth and some of the things that I've done to him over the years will be fantastic. It'll be worth every bit of it. I promise everyone will enjoy. We'll definitely want you to tune in.
Yep. We'll see you Thursday.
Yeah, my man, look at that. That's the EA Sports college football video game. Jesse Palmer, yours truly. Great hair. We'll see you guys Thursday.
Great hair.
You're envious.